Christ's name this morning. It's good to be here with you. And you didn't take too much time, Ernie. That's an interesting piece of history. Good to see our visitors with us, too. I'm glad you're here, all of you. Looks like Sheila managed to drag her boyfriend in here, so that's good to see. And he's even got my last name, which yesterday I found just a little bit intimidating. I wasn't sure about this Gingrich boy coming in here. And I was sitting out there watching the ball game, and he hit a ball over the fence, and I thought, I think he's my cousin. Maybe even my first cousin, I don't know. But we're glad you're here, and see Marvin's parents are here, and there's some other visitors too, so welcome, all of you. Happy Mother's Day to y'all, to all you mothers. Y'all are a blessing, without a doubt. And I'm going to speak a little bit to that this morning. Exodus 20, verse 12. Exodus 20, 12 says this: Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. It doesn't say love your parents, does it? It says honor them. Honor them. So we want to talk about honoring mothers this morning. Godly moms are absolutely priceless, as y'all all know. There's very little much more beneficial to a young child, a Christian in their walk, than a godly mother. And there's some really terrible moms out there. And I know not every mom's perfect. I know every mom is human. I know all that. But there's something about a godly mother that is... My mom had to play a little bit of a different role than most. Shown up. So I have an extra special mom and dad. And... It's not till now, three little ones of my own, and I realize how hard a task that must have actually been. Can you imagine raising Sean? I'm kidding. I was probably the problem. Sean was the one that was actually the easy one to get along with, probably. But it's not hard. It's hard being a parent. That's not easy for being a single parent. I remember... years ago, going through foster care training, and the teacher there, they sent you through a course, and Gary Phillips, still remember the man well. He was a Church of Christ man. He was actually a professor at a college, but he was an excellent teacher. Still remember him well. And one of the things he taught us in that class, I don't remember a whole lot about that class, but one of the things... that stuck with me was the bond between a mother and a child. He said, you will never break that bond, hardly ever. He said, it's a bond that will almost never be broken. The only bond that he said sometimes you'll see stronger is the bond between siblings when they have to band together for survival. But other than that, he said, the point he was making was you can take a child from whatever horrible situation you want to. And you can put them in a nice, kind Christian home. That child will almost always opt to go back to their birth mother, no matter how nice you make it for them. No matter how horrible the birth mother was. There's something about that bond between mother and child that God put in there that's where they want to go. It's where they want to be. Even to their own harm. We can't explain that as humans. In my mind, why wouldn't you be with the people that aren't abusive? But that's not how a child, there's something about a child, they want their parents, they want their mother. And it's a God-given thing. It puts you mothers in a perfectly awesome spot to have powerful influence on your children. I'll just tell you that. You have ways of reaching your child's life that very few of us others dads do to a certain point, but mothers have an extra special way of reaching into their children's lives. There's something about, I still remember as a child being, when I was sick, you know who you wanted, don't you? You wanted mom. There was something about laying on the couch and you're feeling sick, and mom comes along and puts the blanket on you just right. You know what I mean? That's, moms have that way of, have that touch. Let's talk about a man by the name of Clyde. This man possibly was never before in the history of the world preached about in a Mother's Day message. But I guess today might be a first. He was born in 1909 and he died in 1934. Clyde Burrow. Anybody know who Clyde Burrow was? I don't blame you if you don't. If you'd have just thrown that name at me, I probably wouldn't have either. What about if I put the name Bonnie in front of Clyde? Anybody know who Bonnie and Clyde are? Uh-huh. The notorious, infamous outlaw couple of the Depression days. And I don't want to tell this story in a way of glamorizing evil. Clyde was an evil man, and there's books that kind of romanticize him and Bonnie and Clyde and how he was the Robin Hood of that time and he stole from others and took back to his family. He did all that. But Clyde was a bad man. Don't kid yourself. He was an evil man. He was a murderer. He did all those things. So he was born into a poor family. The Depression times was, I don't understand how Depression times were as difficult as what they were, but I can't imagine literally struggling to put food on the table in front of my children. But that was Clyde's dad. Clyde's dad was almost a distant father because he was literally busy trying to feed his family. Their mother was a hardworking lady that insisted on them being in church every time the church doors opened. Clyde grew up in church. They were moved around, they were kicked around, and they eventually ended up in the poor part of Dallas. And Henry Burrow, Clyde's dad, opened a gas station just trying to fix tires and sell gas, just trying to make a living. Clyde's downward path started when he rented a car and went to see a girlfriend and never returned the car, and the company turned it in as stolen. And they eventually got the car back and the crimes were dropped. His second crime seemed to be a bigger deal than the car, and he was arrested for stealing a truckload of turkeys. And everything went downhill from there. And by the age of 20, he was running from the law full time. About that time, he bumped into a girl named Bonnie, and she started running around with him. She was a married woman, by the way. Always was. Never divorced her first husband. Clyde got caught. He got sent to prison. Bonnie snuck him in a gun. He escaped. He got caught a couple of weeks later. He was sentenced to 14 years hard labor on a prison farm. He hated the work. He chopped off his big toe to get out of work early in hopes that he would get sent off to a prison where they wouldn't make him work because he had a missing toe. It was bad timing. His mom got to talking to a judge, and 6 days later he got released, and he went home with a missing toe that he chopped off for basically nothing. He got to limp because of that for the rest of his life. He tried to get a job. He tried to go straight. But it was just too hard, and he got back into the auto theft business. And he got into it with his brother named Buck. And they were pretty good at it, or pretty bad at it, you might say. Buck got caught. Buck got sent to jail. He got out. He decided he's going to go straight. He met up with Clyde. He said, Clyde, you got to quit it. He said, I went to prison. I'm never going to go back. And Clyde said, I've gone too far down this path. I ain't turning around and quitting. I can't earn an honest living. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Buck said, you got to quit. Clyde said, I ain't going to do it. Clyde said, let's go together and let's go rent a house and just have a reunion for 2 weeks. So Buck reluctantly agreed to do it with his wife. They went to Joplin, Missouri. They rented a house. They lived there for a while until the neighbors got suspicious. They called the police, and they literally shot their way out of the house and escaped. Buck was very shortly after shot and killed by the police. So here's this, I'm saying all this partly due to the influence. Buck tried to go straight. He tried to help his brother go straight. It ended up, Clyde turned him right back down the wrong path again. Bonnie and Clyde continued their awful crime spree. They got in a bad car accident. Bonnie got burned by the acid out of the battery. She walked with a limp because of that for the rest of her life. All these things. Clyde was not he was a rough character. And they ran all over the United States. This was the 1930s, but they traveled. They traveled more than the Mennonites. I mean, they were everywhere. And they went fast because they had people chasing them. So why do I tell you all of that story about Bonnie and Clyde? I read that story a couple of weeks ago. And the one thing in the book that stuck to me was the power of Clyde's mother. You know what Clyde did every night before he went to bed? This rough, hardened murderer, every night before he went to bed, he got on his knees and he prayed to God. All because that's what his mother taught him to do. So you might, as a mother, you might not know what you're teaching your children. You might not like the way they're going. You might not like where they are now. But you don't know as a mother what's going to stick with your child years down the road, maybe on a path that you wish they wouldn't have been on. You don't know what's sticking with them. So I say that, don't give up. You have influence. You have influence on your child's life. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 1. We'll read 19 through 28. There's lots of godly mother examples in the Bible, but I figured we'd talk about Hannah this morning. So let's read 1 Samuel 1, 19 through 28. We'll start there. And they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked him of the Lord." And the man Elkanah and all of his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up. For she said unto her husband, "I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him, and he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever." And Elkanah, her husband, said unto her, "Do what seems good to thee. Tarry until thou have weaned him. Only the Lord establish his word." So the woman abode, gave her son suck until she weaned him. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bullocks, and with one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine, and brought them unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, "O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition which I asked him. Therefore also have I lent him to the Lord as long as he liveth, and he shall be lent to the Lord, and he shall worship there." So right before this, if we would have read it, we would have had Hannah's prayer for a son. She wanted a son. She wanted a child. And it seemed like the old polygamy problem of those days was pretty alive and well, because this other wife of Elkanah, I'm not sure how you pronounce the name, Paniah, something along that line, Sounds like something you'd order at what is the name of that? Panera Bread. Anyway, that's what came to my mind. Anyway, it seemed like she was having some struggles with this other lady. And she was a lady with a deep need and a deep desire. And she actually got accused of being drunk there by Eli. And she assured him she was not drunk. She just had this prayer that she was praying to God. She asked for a blessing from God, and she got it. She got it. We see her, I think that's in verse 24. In the last part of that chapter, 24 through 28, we see her honoring her word of returning this child to the work, to the service of the Lord. And I can't imagine that probably wasn't easy for her. I had to wonder if, I don't know, did she have friends around her saying, why are you taking this young boy back to the temple? You're giving him up. You're going to miss some of his childhood. I don't know if she had some of that stuff going on or not, but she was human. Likely she had friends that thought she was making the wrong decision. I don't know if she did or not. But she made a promise, and she kept it, even though it hurt. She kept it. Chapter 2 is an interesting read, that prayer, that poem she wrote, the first 10 verses. And in verse 219, I found that kind of interesting. Brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer a yearly sacrifice. If that's not a typical mom right there, moms are always worried about their children being cold. And here she is every year sewing her boy a coat, taking it up to him. It just kind of seems to show her mother's heart. And the Lord went on and he blessed her with 5 more children. You'll read that a little later in the chapter. She was a fine, godly mother. Number one, she made a petition to God, and she went away happy before knowing the results. That was the start of it. You'll find that in 118. She made a promise to God, and she kept it, even though it wasn't comfortable. And when it came time to let her child go, she let him go. She let him go. She stayed in touch, but she let him go. I had to wonder a little bit about Samuel. His mom must have done a pretty good job explaining what was going to happen. We don't see, if he was complaining about it, he's pretty silent about it. You don't hear him robbing about his childhood being robbed or anything like that. Obviously, she had the wisdom to know how much to say and when to say it. I struggle with that sometimes with my children. I don't think they need to know everything that's going on. But their brains can't comprehend it. But how do you, at the right time, say it? Say what needs to be said. Teach them what needs to be taught. Going the wrong way here. Something I wanted to remind you mothers of. Don't forget, you have your child now, but someday they're going to grow up and you're going to have to let them go, just like Hannah did. And if you don't, it's going to cause you more grief than good. I get out in the public just enough to see, and I don't see it real often, but I see it occasionally, full-grown, 100% capable young men or girls living at home with their parents, just living there, and not with no plan. This is the future. This is going to be home. It's comfortable. And it's not good. It's not healthy for a society. I still remember being down south of here, and I got done with my job, and I go to the door to get paid, and they open the door, and you look in there, and there's five adult children sitting around in the middle of the day. These are 30-year-olds probably, sitting there watching a movie in a dark house in the middle of the day. And this was their life plan, it looked like. They were all pretty comfortable. Mama made things pretty comfortable, and I couldn't help but think Mama needs to make something kind of uncomfortable for these little eagles that need to, they need to fly the nest. It wasn't doing them any good or anybody else any good. They were not productive looking folk. Sometimes we see that, I think, I've already seen mothers face that temptation. They don't want to let go. They want to hang on. Let the little eagle fly. I remember when I, right after I graduated school, I was 13, 14, I was 14 years old, I think. And that summer, it wasn't very long after I was out of school, Daniel called and he wondered if I needed a job. And he was talking to Mom. And I remember thinking, I didn't really want a job. I kind of liked my freedom. I had a whole summer in front of me. You know what? Mama made me go to work. And looking back, I'm so glad Mama sent me off to work. I needed to go to work. I needed something to do. It wasn't good for a 14-year-old to sit around idle. That wouldn't have been good. She sent me to work with a smile, and she could have used me on the farm. Maybe she might have had trouble keeping me busy all the time, and I think she knew that. So send the boy off to work. And it was good for me. I'm glad she did. Just a few reminders for mothers. I don't know how to say all this, but this probably isn't any of y'all. But don't abandon your husband for the sake of your children. I did want to say that. I've seen mothers already that their children are so much the apple of their eye that they almost forget their husband. They can tend to neglect their husband. And I'm not saying don't take care of your children. Don't hear me say that. That's not what I'm saying. But I will say this. You made a vow to your husband on your wedding day. You never made a vow to your children. And while if you are a mother, your God-given responsibility is to take care of your children. I'm not saying that's any less important than a vow you made to your husband. But don't forget, you did make a vow to your husband on your wedding day. So you are just as obligated to him as you are your children. Your husband needs you also. And I know it goes through different stages. If you have a newborn baby in the house, a good husband's going to understand some things ain't going to get done around the house that he might like to have done. And that's all right. But if your youngest child is 15 years old and you're still spending all your time taking care of your children, they can probably start taking care of themselves. And yeah, I'll say that. Don't abandon your husband in the care of your children. He needs you too. If I'd rather see a house that's a little messy and a good relationship between a husband and a wife than a woman that has the perfectly dressed children and the perfectly cared for house and the perfectly manicured flower beds and everything's perfect, but the husband and the wife don't have that great of a relationship. Is that fair? Is that mean? You can tell me if I'm wrong. The world has a saying out there that the two parents drop their last child off at college, and on the way home they look at each other and they say, "Who are you?" Meaning they spent all their years raising children. The only thing they focused on was raising and getting these children out the door, and when they do, they look at each other and they don't know who each other are. Don't let that be you. A godly woman is resourceful and wise, but still sometimes her godly husband knows best. Moses' mom came to mind. She was a very resourceful woman. Did you ever think about it? She followed the king's command. She threw her baby in the river. She just made sure he floated. That was pretty wise. And then it got discovered by the princess, and she got paid to take care of him. That's a wise mother. There's also examples like Sarah, who got a little bit impatient with God's timing and encouraged Abraham to have a child through Hagar, and Ishmael was born. And then there was all kinds of problems in that home. And I don't know where Abraham was in all that. I don't know if that was, I don't know what his, if he would have encouraged anything like that. But it seems like Sarah brought it up and was the one that pushed for that. Maybe sometimes your husband does know. Even if you are a godly and a wise woman. Something else I'd like to touch on just a little bit is the struggle that some mothers have. I don't know if y'all have, I don't know if I'm speaking to the needs of the mothers in this congregation or not, but I've heard already that mothers don't feel they're doing enough for the Lord. All they do is take care of the children. And I'll just tell you, the Christian life is one of service. We all know that. It's about serving others. And if you're a godly woman, you want to help build God's kingdom too by serving. But don't ever look down on the fact that the children you're serving, that if it's your children you're serving, that doesn't make it any less important. It makes it probably more important. Your children are your first responsibility. Don't let the culture around you fool you into thinking that a full-time mom is somehow a less than desired position. It's not. It might be exhausting, low-paying, and thankless, but it's a position where there's so much influence you have over your children. This is certainly not my case either, but I've mentioned that there is horrible moms out there. There's people out there that don't have good moms. I know that's true. And I'm not sure where it was. It was maybe here. One of the other ministry might have said the story of the man that, and I don't remember exactly who the man was, but he was giving a testimony to his mother, about his mother. And everybody in the crowd that he was talking to knew he had a horrible mother that abandoned him as a newborn baby. And afterwards, somebody asked him, why? How can you honor your mother when she did that to you? Why do you even say that? And he said, she chose to carry me for 9 months when most of her friends were getting abortions. So because of that, I can still honor my mother. And it takes a Christian to say something like that. Obviously, the man was a Christian, that he didn't hold a grudge against a mom like that. But moms are human. Maybe you have a mom that needs to be forgiven for something. Maybe you have a mom that made mistakes. Don't hold a grudge against her if you do. You can still honor her for what she did for you in your youth, in your young days. Proverbs 31:28 in closing. Proverbs 31:28. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. I'll say this in closing. I think it's important to verbally, if your mother's still alive on this earth, verbally tell your mother, Happy Mother's Day, thanks for all you did. That's important. I'm not saying it's not. But I'll tell you what's more important is by actually living your life in a way that would please your godly mother, whether she's here or whether she's in heaven already. Live your life in a way that pleases her. Tell her thank you if she's alive. Tell her all that. But my challenge is live your life, your Christian life, in a way that would make your godly mother proud of you, happy for you, not just to please her, but because it's the right thing to do. God bless all you mothers. I know y'all have a challenging, busy, full life. I know all that. But y'all, the old saying of the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world, there's some truth in that. And we're grateful for you. Let's kneel for prayer.